Ah, it's August. Did you catch the lights at that moment, huh? August is like, isn't it the dog days of summer? That's what it's known as, the dog days of summer. Now, you know why it's called that? Me neither, actually. It turns out it's said to tie in with the dog star Sirius, S-I-R-I-U-S, like the satellite radio thing. The dog star Sirius, which is the brightest star in the night sky in the northern hemisphere this time of year. Boring. Sirius, you get dog days of summer out of that? I got a better explanation. Take a look at your nearest canine. Okay, just take a look. And if your dog is anything like Peyton, our dog, then you will know in the hot August days of summer, the one thing she wants to do during the day is nap, and the one thing she wants to do all night is sleep. And you get now a better picture of the dog days of summer. And I look at my dog and I go sometimes, lucky. Seriously. I watch her, and last night, I don't know, some leftovers, some of my neighbors are nearby, leftovers from 4th of July went off at about 10 or something like. I mean, the kind, you're okay with it on New Year's Eve and on 4th of July because you're expecting the, you know, the booms and the, you know, but seriously, it's August like 17th, 16th, and just quiet, we're thinking about sleep and bedtime, and then all of a sudden, and Peyton just jumped out of her fur, ran to the back door like, hey, okay, I'm tired, let me go to bed. Just classic canine. Now, I look at her and I think lucky, because rest doesn't come that easily for people. It's a hard thing for us. Even when we manage in summer months like the dog days to get a little bit of rest, I have observed, and maybe you too, that it rarely remains. You get a little bit of that restful feeling, and then it's followed by restlessness. Debbie and I were privileged to go to Hawaii, where we spent a week in Maui. And as people had told us about the islands, as soon as you land, the trade winds, the gentle breeze, and I'm seeing smiles everywhere, so some of you have done this too, but you land and these trade winds sort of take over. It's as though they got this power over your soul, because seriously, all the stress to get packed and loaded to the airport and everything, it's gone now, and you land, and these trade winds start to blow, and they begin to soothe your spirit. That's what we were told. Well, you know what? It worked. It really did. I thought, come on, really? And then we get there, and it starts to happen, and that aloha feeling was easy. And the rest of the week kind of went that way, you know. It was sunny all the time. It was lighthearted the entire week. Sandy beaches, snorkeling, a guava, a pineapple, shaved ice, papaya. We went to a luau, floral lays. Am I getting to you yet? I mean, it went on and on like this, and we were like eating it up. We were just absorbed in it. And then something really cool happened, besides the fact that my entire thing died. So the week went on like that, and we found ourselves sort of dreading the coming day, because we knew it was about to be here. And we were ready to get on the flight, but we were missing some of what we knew we would have to leave behind. And so we took some things with us. We had pineapple, and we had some Kona coffee, And we had some, of course, macadamia chocolate, all right? And we had all of that, and sure enough, we get on an airplane, and we return to Portland, and it was like this terrible, like, thing happened to us. Suddenly, Aloha became Aloha, a city in Oregon, right? We're thinking, this is, what happened? What went wrong? I'm here to tell you this morning that it's not easy for people to rest, and it's not easy for the rest to remain. Our Bibles tell us about an image that God wants us to get. He wants us to understand. And I say that because it's a relationship he's describing between him and people like you and me. That he describes this way many hundreds of times in the Bible. It's the image, the relationship between shepherd, God, and sheep, people. My Bible's open to Psalm 23. It's probably the most familiar and favorite for lots of us when it comes to this relationship. I want you to turn there if you haven't already. I don't have the page number. I would have had it, but Psalm 23, most people have it sort of tucked away in their hearts. But I want you to look at Psalm 23 with me, and I want you to let me read it and take it in again. Yesterday, I was in this room with a family that was grieving the loss of a mother and a grandmother and a great-grandmother and a great-great-grandmother. And her favorite psalm was Psalm 23. We read it for that gathering in King James because that's how it was originally written, right? But today, Psalm 23 in New International is the Bible version you have. So let me read it. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. May I stop at the end, that last sentence? I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Not just that sentence, but every sentence prior to that can't be yours through religion. Okay? The ultimate test is what this family placed their hope in yesterday. That their mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, and great-great-grandmother knew Jesus Christ. And as a result of that relationship, is home with him now. But way before going home to be with him, which is the ultimate payoff, the ultimate outcome, all of these other things were hers as she journeyed with Jesus in this life. That gets exciting. May I say it again? Religion can't deliver that. So if you're into the religion thing, you say, what does that mean? The do's, the don'ts, the try-harders, the if you only work at it more, it'll be yours. That's not going to deliver any of this stuff, including I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. In fact, tragically, Jesus says in Matthew 7, there are a whole lot of you that did more and tried harder, but you didn't know me. Depart from me. We never had a relationship. Now, David was the one that God assigned these words to deliver. Not surprisingly, you get that sense that David knew this dynamic very well. It wasn't academic to him. It was very personal. Because as you know, David was the son of Jesse, and for lots of years before he became King David, he did what? He shepherded sheep. He looked after his dad's flock. So David knows what he's talking about. And did you see the not accidental sequence? Let me start this way. What's the first sentence of Psalm 23? The Lord is my shepherd. That's not a religion there. Can I say it this way too? It's not a higher power. It's not a divine, distant deity. It's not what you get in those words. The Lord is my shepherd. It's intentional pronoun. It's my shepherd. You hear the relationship there? And next up, do you see the sequence? Notice, he makes me lie down. He leads me beside quiet water. And then, verse 3, he restores my soul. God knows me so well that God knows it's best for me not to just deliver the restoration, but to do so through a restoration of relationship with him. Most any of us would say, I love the idea of being restored in my soul. I love the idea of that relationship, of the verse 3, he restores my soul. But how many of us, seriously now, would honestly say we cooperate well with he makes me lie down in green pastures? Could the word makes me, could that expression actually describe the difficulty that many of us have being led to a place of peace? We're agitated in our spirit. We're troubled by our circumstances. We see things not working out so well, and we sing songs that say, Jesus, I'm resting. But it isn't happening. Could the mistake that many of us make be summed up in, I don't let him lead me. I don't let him make me lie down. And restoration doesn't happen. I was thinking about things that I've heard about this week and have been on my heart this week. And they represent things that make it difficult to rest. Okay? So sheep, I've learned some things about sheep. They don't rest easily either. So once again, you start to appreciate why the Bible is so fond of this analogy of shepherd, sheep, God, and people relationship. We share that in common with sheep. We don't rest well either. Part of the things that have been on my mind are stealing sleep from sheep this week. In the category of health, there are many in our midst fighting cancer. They're, in some cases, faced with nearly impossible challenges. There are others with chronic health conditions. Cancer gets all the attention, but they've got a condition that doesn't get better. The best they can hope for is sort of a remission, but it's hard. It's very difficult. And then in the category of relationships or people problems, just this week, walking with people through malignant misunderstandings with others, where it brought about a complete collapse in a relationship. Just this week, rebellious young adults or teenagers, and trying to help parents hold on and hang in there and persevere. Divorce decisions that are right now. This is now. You saw already a video. You didn't hear anything, but the video about Dave Ramsey and the financial peace. Think about that. The premise there is, if you got too many bills and not enough income, you're in a condition, in a place where it's not so peaceful, right? So the reason we're providing that is not to help you make a killing or get so, you know, wealthy you never have to worry about money. It's to help you establish some definition in areas that are hard for most anybody. And as a result, to find your way to peace and rest. But there's a whole lot of people this week saying, I can't make it. I don't know how we're going to pull this thing off. I don't have a job and I can't seem to find one. I go into that list just to illustrate this point. We're not talking in the abstract here. This is not just some sort of theoretical conversation. The Jesus I am resting challenge. Maybe you felt it when you sang the song. A little bit of envy. Like it was 150 years ago when the woman wrote that song. And it was interesting. I discovered that she didn't write it in a crisis. She actually wrote it when life was sort of just kind of going along. Routine, we would say. And then 16 years later, the bottom fell out. A terrible, tragic loss in her life. And then the song had even new meaning and deeper meaning. Because it represented something that's possible for us when things are good and when things aren't. But none of that's going to be ours unless we find our way to calling him as David did, my shepherd. I'd like you to remember this statement. God does not always remove us from the situation to bring us rest. Rather, he enters into the midst of that situation and meets us there to deliver his rest. At the bottom of your outline, you see that in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, for example. The Apostle Paul had a thorn in his flesh and he begged God to remove it. What it was isn't important. The reality was it was a terrible distraction and a burden and a hard thing. And it made rest hard for him to have. And so he said, God, like I would say, take it from me. Remove this, he says, three times in verse 7, 2 Corinthians 12. Take this from me, God. I can't get to this place of rest with that on my heart. And as you may know the story, God didn't remove it from him at all. Instead, it says God came into the midst of it with his grace, and it led to rest. It led to this strange word to find in a passage like that, contentment. Remember, the burden never left him. The thorn wasn't removed, but God entered into it with him. Here's something else I want you to remember. Rest isn't a place. Rest is not found in Hawaii. Did you know that people in Hawaii take fistfuls of antidepressants just like they do in all 49 other states in America? Wow. You mean that's not just true in Missouri right now? Or Ukraine? Or northern Iraq? No. It's true in Maui. It's true in Tigard, Portland, Seattle, wherever you live. So rest is not found in a place. It's found in a person. And to show you what I'm talking about, one last stop. I want you to turn from Psalm 23 to Matthew 11. Would you turn to Matthew 11? And I want you to see in chapter 10 something. You're about to read words that most of us have read and heard before at the end of chapter 11. But to appreciate them, you got to back up to chapter 10. You will find in chapter 10, Jesus has gathered his disciples and said, I'm about to send you out. And I want you to be my witnesses. I want you to go everywhere you go and talk about me. And, verse 16 kind of summarizes what they're getting into. I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. Not surprisingly, the same analogy. Sheep. You are a sheep. I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves. Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and innocent as doves. Chapter 10 is all about the trials and troubles that they and Christ followers today will face. Okay, just so we understand the words we're about to read, let's just look at a few of those. Be on your guard against men. They will hand you over, verse 17, Matthew 10. Jesus says, they will hand you over to the local councils and flog you in their synagogues. On my account, you will be brought before governors and kings as witnesses to them and to the Gentiles. But when they arrest you, don't sweat it. Don't worry about what to say or how to say it. At that time, you will be given what to say. For it will not be you doing the saying. You're not going to be the one speaking, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Notice, brother will betray brother to death, and father will betray his child, and children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. All men will hate you because of me. Are you serious? If I was there, I would have said, really? You're sending me out? Your words in verse 16, like a sheep among wolves, and did I hear you right? All men will hate me because of you, Jesus? How about that? I like that you like me. I like that I have a very short list of people that don't like me. Is that, I don't know what you want to say about me by saying that. But I'll just tell you, I don't go around picking fights or looking for enemies. But Jesus says, you picked me and that will come at a price. All people. I think the northern Iraq Christian population might say, I get that. I understand. Book of Martyrs through the ages would say that. Stephen, the very first martyr in Acts chapter 7, would say, I understand. I understand what you meant there, Jesus. So that's what he tells his disciples and then sends them out. Chapter 11, then Jesus heads out on what we could only call, be described as a grueling schedule, preaching and teaching up in northern Galilee. So he sends out his disciples and he takes off north and he spends time around the lake. And as he does, he's preaching, he's teaching, he's presenting the truth of God to people that aren't getting it real fast. All sorts of resistance, and it's to two specific people, he says what he says at the end of verse of chapter 11, verse 28. Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I want you to circle two words that are really important: weary and burdened. Weariness is tired from the toil. How many of you have a job or have had a job that you worked full time at? Congratulations, you qualify as weary. In fact, a normal week of work will render you weary. That means change diapers all week, burp babies, do the laundry, cook meals, weary. That means discipline children when they're behaving badly. That means being the recreational captain during the summer when school's out. Weary. 1 week of that, weary. That means doing bids and knocking down projects at work and winning contracts and finishing jobs, weary. Weary. That means if you're a police officer and you bust bad guys, or a firefighter and you come to rescues or put out fires, or you're a first responder that comes and offers aid, weary. Nothing fancy here. Just work for a week and you'll be weary. That's what Jesus is saying. And to you who are weary, a synonym is worn out. Come to me, all who are worn out. Interesting. That was his way of saying, I'm not going to send you to a place. I know Maui sounds like that place, or wherever it is for you. You know, Mount Rainier or something. But he says, come to me. And there's a second person he had in mind here, and it was the second word you circled, burdened. Where weary people are tired of the toil, burdened people are weighed down with trouble. I made the list, my list of this week's troubles, a little of them, a few moments ago. Trouble comes, it's really the stuff of chapter 10. Chapter 11 is weary. Chapter 10 is trouble. It's burdens. It's the secret that you live with today. And no one knows, well, almost no one. You know, and Jesus knows. But for the most part, no one else knows. Not yet. Let me tell you a story, an example of that. You tell me if this man was burdened. I started out this talk by mentioning David. He was a shepherd boy at one time, but when he became king, he became powerful. And he could do what he wanted, and one night he decided to prove it. And he lusted after a woman. And she became pregnant. And he devised an ingenious way of covering his trails, including the murder of her husband. And he thought he got away with it. Except, like I said earlier, it's never really a secret because he knew and God knew. And before, listen to me now, before God sent a prophet, his name was Nathan, on assignment to go to David, before that happened, and before David went, you're right, I'm wrong, God, I'm sorry, please forgive me. Before all of that, David said this in Psalm 32. We started in Psalm 23. Psalm 32, he said this. All day long, I kept silent about my sin, and my body withered away as with the fever heat of summer. It sucked the life out of me. That secret. People, that's a picture of burden. If you're living with a secret, Jesus says, don't keep it. Don't conceal it any longer because it's corrosive to your soul. And here's the deal. You'll rest will escape you. Rest will remain out of reach for you. Corrie ten Boom made a wonderful summary statement of Jesus' words here in Matthew 11. When Jesus said, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest, not in the pillow, but for something way deeper, your soul. For my yoke is easy and my load is light." You know what Corrie ten Boom said of that? She said, it's easy to remember. God's saying to you and me, to the weary and to the burden, don't wrestle, just nestle. Isn't that good? Don't wrestle, just nestle. Long time ago, we had a daughter who was 3 and a half. And at that time, we just had one other child, our son, who was about 1.5 years. And I was kind of watching them play and watching Carrie Ann just burn up all kinds of energy, enough for 2 or 3 humans, you know, and just high energy play. But I could see, I started to pick up on those signs that said she's wearing out. She needs a break. And that was immediate, almost was when I perceived that, it was immediately followed by this tug of war with a toy and her brother. And the fight was on. And it was like, you know, real intense. And I see this going on and I'm thinking, what do I, you know, I got to stop this thing. She really is in terrible need of a nap. And I thought through my options, I could just give her a lecture on being fair and playing kindly. And then I thought, well, you know, her rationality is completely gone. I could just like boldly intervene. Or I could do what some people said you ought to do in times like this. Take her to her mother. Just kidding. Actually, somebody told me, if you ever see your child like that, they're just kind of out of control, wild, and it's spiraling down. I did what I was, it was an experiment at the time, but I scooped her into my arms and I held her tight. And she went wild. I'm telling you, just fighting to get out of my grip. And I kept holding on. And a few moments later, almost suddenly, there was this release. And I mean, so sudden, I looked down thinking I squeezed her too tight, you know. And what did I see in my arms? A red-faced little girl, no longer fighting it, no longer wrestling. She was now nestling as she slept in her daddy's arms. People, that's what Jesus wants to give us. We're going to sing that song again. Jesus, I'm resting, I'm resting. In the joy of what thou art, finding as you promise, all that comes in your loving heart for me. I'd like, as the lights come down, for you to bow your heads with me this morning. Maybe I've listed a burden you live with right now, a physical fight, a medical challenge that's not getting better, a relationship collapse that you can't make better on your own, financial nightmare you're living. Job challenge, whatever it is. Jesus says to you and to me, come to me. Come to me. I don't want you to wrestle. It takes all the joy out of life for you. I want you to nestle in my arms. I want you to feel the peace that's possible in the midst of the storm because you have me in it with you. I pray that that would be something for us, God. To remember that it's not a place, it's you. It's a person. And you love us. And when we're frazzled and crazy and frantic and irrational, you take us in your arms and say, hey, it's me. Thank you that you give us rest.